Big Dog Ball Talk. My name is Jordan Flegel. Back at you. It's been really a week since we've been on the podcast airwaves. Hand up, my bad. Friday's episode came out on Monday, and then Monday we just didn't do an episode. We were going to do a Wednesday special, and then Jordan's moving back to the Sheep Island. I'm in vacation mode already, which is also probably a good time to announce, I guess. There will be no podcast for like 10 days while I'm on vacation, unless Jordan would
Jordan would like to go solo, just like you did.
Yeah, maybe you can get producer Alex on.
Yeah, it's true. If I can figure out how to do any of the things that you do, vis-a-vis uploading, editing the podcast, because of course Alex is in the booth, but after that he goes home.
Hey, Alex, he's right over there, he's waving at me.
Hey, buddy. If I can figure that out, I'll happily fly solo. It'll be fun. Finally, get to ramble my takes off without you fucking interrupting me all the time.
Yes,
asshole.
Exactly. But nobody really wants to hear that, I'm sure. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, never mind.
Before we get into this week's podcast, and there's lots to break down, talking Steph Curry, 56 fucking points in last night's game against the Orlando Magic. A little bit of Pistons talk, haven't given them the respect, and we're going to give them some this time.
Yes.
My Pistons. Talking the Rockets and Amen Thompson, the Cavs clinching a playoff spot, as well as Anthony Edwards receiving a one-game suspension for getting that 16th tech. We're going to talk a little bit Timberwolves basketball. Once again, I've got to find a way to talk my way back into the Timberwolves are my finals pick. Before we get into it, Jordan, I do want to say this. I want to call it out. Yesterday was the Ontario provincial election here. Big dog political talk.
Oh, yes.
And I would like to just say this.
Big
I don't care. I don't care how it goes. I don't care who gets put in. I mean, I do, but I don't. You know, it's democracy manifest. I don't care. But
a succulent Chinese meal.
Get your hands off me. No, we'll get there. But I got to say this. If you didn't vote, you're a bitch. I'm putting that tag on you. I'm not saying that you didn't fulfill your civic duty. I'm not saying that you're a dishonor to the country. You're a bitch. You didn't vote, you're a bitch.
Look, I didn't vote,
you're
just for the record. Only
you held that tag for 4 years, bitch.
Only because, and I hope my insurers aren't listening to this and listening. I'm committing insurance fraud over my auto insurance currently with an address that, which is actually at my cottage, Matt, if you can believe it, way up there, which I obviously don't live there. I mean, I have some connection to the place. But long story short, since my address is there, I can't well go and vote in Thornhill where I am currently. So, and I couldn't get up there in time. So that is on me. I'll take the bitch. Tyler, it was a technicality.
Are you not able to go and just show them like a proof of residence and stuff? You're not able to do that?
Well, no, because I've got to be voting for my MP and my thing. Mm. You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure when I lived in Toronto, my ID said Midland because I was doing kind of a similar thing. And I just had to show them that I lived in Toronto and I said I was a student and this is where I have to vote. So I think that I ended up voting. Like they don't like it. They were all pissy about it, but they can put it and submit it for the right. I don't know. There is a way, but that is at least an understandable excuse because it is a pain in the ass.
Thank you. Thank you.
And technically, you're not a student. You are just an insurance frauder. Or quote unquote, we're just saying that for laughs and satire.
Yeah, I'm joking. I live in Palmer Rapids, obviously.
Yes, he's just summering in the winter. In Thornhill. I do want to point that out, though. 45% of people voted. That's fucked up.
Yes. Like, yeah. Whatever. It's the winter, the first winter election in 100 years. It's not that hard to go and do it. Like,
nope.
You can probably find a place wherever you are. I mean, especially if you're in the GTA, that's about 5 minutes away from where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So
took me a total of five minutes to vote, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And we have this is the conversation that's had every time. Dougie, he's in again, I suppose. We'll see what he's got for us this time. What type of green space he's potentially going to try and take away.
Hey, LCBO, they don't have to regulate their prices anymore. Let's go.
That's great. And you know what? I'll give Doug credit. The beer in the convenience stores has been a nice touch, buddy. Very well done. It made me forget that the healthcare system is broken. So well done.
Well, we will keep a watch on Dougie and what he does. But a message out there for you, all of our listeners. I know we have some global listeners in the U.S. of A., Europe, mm-hmm, Australia, mm-hmm. Wherever. We see you guys downloading our shit and listening to the big dogs ramble. And I can't implore you guys enough to vote. The shout out to Zelensky. It's tough times these days.
Jesus Christ.
But
yes,
moving on into basketball talk. Just shut up and dribble, Jordan. Let's talk about Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Still doing the damn thing. 35 years of age, maybe he's 36 at this point. My God, whatever he's aged at this point, he's still dropping 56 points, 12 three balls in a thriller on the road against the Orlando Magic. An awesome performance from arguably the best point guard of all time. Still showing that when he's got the right team built around him, he can just explode. And in this one, it was crazy. Like, the Magic deserved to win this game. Like, Steph Curry, yeah. Like, there's very rare times that I think you can actually, like, circle it and say, like, one guy won them a game. Like, I always think, you know, a couple of those LeBron Cav years near the end, both 10 years near the end. I mean, really, his first rookie through 2010, every single year was just LeBron, pretty much. But most of the time, you can't win the basketball games with just one guy contributing. And in this one, that was 100% the case. You had some solid contributions here off the bench from Quentin Post. Draymond spun in 12, but really, this was all about Steph Curry and his performance. And again, he was making this look easy. He was embarrassing the second best defense in the NBA. And at his advanced age, it just was awesome to see a great throwback performance for the baby-faced assassin. And, you know, it's kind of making me grow even more confident in this team as the days go on. Since they made this Jimmy Butler trade, they're riding high on a 5-game win streak currently right now, Jordan, and there's really no signs of slowing down as they sit only a half game behind the Clippers to break into that top six.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I didn't even realize until literally this second that that is where they had climbed all the way up to, because, you know, for a while there, they were down bottom half of the play-in.
I think they were around 12 at one point.
Yeah, yeah. And so that it's crazy that that's how jumbled the standings are in the West, that not even that impressive of a little streak here can vault you all the way up. And, you know, I think it's really interesting when we talked about Jimmy Butler, his addition to Golden State. It's like, well, now your big three is quite old, and there's not a lot of precedence for an old big three when all three of those guys are, 35 plus, going and winning a title or even making a deep playoff run. Those things usually fall apart. But the fact that, like, Curry had a game like this, I don't know if he would have even been able to summon something like this if the Warriors had, like, stood pat, not made any moves. Like, we know that Steph has this in him, but, like, it's kind of like what we're seeing with LeBron recently ever since the Luka trade happened. Like, if you kind of switch things up and say, you know what, we are going to put more talent around you, we're going to give you, even though you are old, we're going to give you some more reinforcements here, it seems to really work with at least in the case of Steph and LeBron, just gives them these little boosts of energy, a little nitro boost. I think, the fact that he can go off for 56 is still now, and for 12 threes, for God's sake, is insane. We'll see if this is something that, he can do multiple times in a playoff run, against locked in defenses and sort of down the stretch of the season as well. How if Golden State can stay at 7, if they can climb higher, avoid the play-in maybe. It's just the fact that this game happened at all is a great sign for the Warriors. It's super exciting. The fact they can go and win with Jimmy Butler taking 7 shots, for God's sakes. He had 5 points in this one, basically a non-factor. Mm-hmm. But in the games before this, since Jimmy's been there, he's completely added this whole new amazing dimension to their team of getting someone getting to the free throw line, barreling in there, using his body, being physical. So now you look at it, they've got the finesse part of it, that Steph can bring. If you're just thinking about it in terms of a playoff series, Jimmy can take one game, sort of play the game, muck it up his way, if Steph doesn't have it. And then when Steph is, goes nuclear, like in a game like this, then it almost doesn't matter when anyone else on the Warriors does, because Steph can win you a game all by himself. But now they've got kind of that insurance. So this was classic vintage Steph. We should enjoy it while it's here, because he's not going to be in the league all that much longer. You're seeing this kind of rejuvenation, and I think it's going to happen with a guy like Draymond too. Like, Draymond and Jimmy, very like kindred spirits of guys who take the game incredibly seriously, maybe too seriously at times. We'll get in your face, won't back down from anybody. And I just think, maybe this is an example of one of these sort of older big threes where the personalities and the play styles mix well enough that you could maybe see them winning a round, maybe two rounds. I don't know. I've got to see more. It's still small sample size, but this is a very good sign so far that they've been winning at the clip that they have. And yeah, they're not just all, it's not all on Steph's shoulders now, which has been the main problem for the last couple of years.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, kind of off the top in this one, like, yes, I do think that the Magic should have won this game. I do think they outplayed them for the majority of it. Really, it was
at the end. You got a 40-piece from Paolo that didn't mean anything.
Yep, he posterized Looney, I believe, in this one as well. That was a nice one. I would love to see more of that from Paolo, a little bit less mid-range pull-ups. Nonetheless, they still played solid defense. There was a few lapses here and there, but, I mean, it was all based from, you know, Steph Curry pull-ups and Steph Curry pump fakes, like things that, you know, the best defenders fall for. You can't really fault yourselves too much for that. They held deep into it until like the very last second. So, you know, a respectable loss on a, you know, for a team that's really been trying. And again, one of the top defenses. But my biggest takeaway from this one really was that it's cool that Steph can finally play off ball again, because that was really what, you know, I think you had penciled it pretty early on this season. One of the biggest reasons for the Warriors' struggles was that they didn't have anybody else other than Steph that could reliably handle the ball. Like, they made that trade for Dennis Schroeder. It didn't work. You know, as much as he gets, you know, assists, it's not really because he got eyes in the back of his head. Schroeder's more because he's just driving and shooting and driving and shooting, and eventually he'll kick it out to somebody who can shoot, which, you know, doesn't really work when you've got a generational guy like Steph Curry on the other side of your backcourt. In this one now, I feel like when you watch him and Jimmy Butler play together, it's kind of like adding a second Draymond Green onto the court, where, you know, you can have this guy who's, you know, maybe not going to space the floor too much, but is athletic enough that, you know, he can still be a threat cutting to the rim, but can also, you know, make passes, make stretch passes, swing passes, find guys in the corner. Like, he is a good threat to, you know, playmake as a forward, and that is what Steph's always excelled with. You know, Draymond Green, I kind of compare this to having, you know, Iggy back with the Warriors in a way.
Very similar.
Great fit. And then, you know, you're talking about kind of Warriors, the goated Warriors, that Warriors dynasty. I'm talking, you know, 2015, 2016, before the Durant years. You know, you also had guys like Andrew Bogut that was just a big body guy, and I wouldn't say that he's got, you know, exactly the same stature and, you know, defensive skill set of an Andrew Bogut at this point, former number one overall pick, gotta respect it. But Quentin Post, I mean, you made a little bit of a remark about him. He is actually good. He has been really solid for the Warriors, and I think the biggest, again, thing for me, especially watching this game, like, I'm surprised they aren't starting him. I think that that'll probably happen anytime soon. I know he started the second half of this game. But in this one, he was nonstop moving. He was setting screens. He was following Steph. Like, he was the perfect big man to play with Steph. Yep. Just set the fucking screens. If you roll, you might get found. If Steph doesn't decide to pull it up, you know, they can run the elevator doors. They've got everything they need to succeed right now. I didn't expect, you know, some of these guys to kind of come out of nowhere and start excelling. Moses Moody has, you know, really kind of strung together some good defensive possessions as well. The offense is definitely a little bit lackluster still. But I definitely, you know, will say I didn't like the move when it first happened for Jimmy Butler. But if Steph can, you know, shoot even, you know, close to the clip that he was in this one down the stretch of the season, this, like you said, could be a dangerous team that maybe could win one or two series in the playoffs. Because, again, a lot of proven playoff performances on this team. So I don't think I can doubt them. The overall depth is still a little bit troubling. You know, Buddy Hield and Gary Payton and Kevon Looney, you know, they're not really guys who I'm circling as reliable postseason players. You know, even Moody, who I mentioned here off the top, not 100% sold on him. But really, the only thing I think that you can kind of, you know, narc on them a little bit on this one is that, you know, Jimmy, you need to score more than 5 points. Like, you had the 7 assists. That's great. But again, Steph's not going to shoot, you know, 12 for 19 from three every single game. You know, he's going to need some help offensively come playoff time. So if they can, get one or two more people up in their scoring a little bit here, the Warriors might be scary this season. And I'm really liking the way that their roster's playing. And I think Steve Kerr finally kind of has the personnel that he's been looking for all season long.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the last thing they need, hopefully, you know, for a playoff run, is the Jonathan Kuminga piece. I mean, he's still not out there.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and they've been playing well even without him. But if he comes in there, like, we'll see if he can develop a little bit of chemistry on the floor at the same time with Jimmy, like, you know, if you have Steph plus Jimmy, the cum bucket and Draymond, that's not a lot of shooting in your forward spots, but that is, you know, that's a big front line that's, you know, physical and in the case of Kuminga, you know, quite athletic. Like, I could see them maybe working something there, but at the very least, Kuminga just adding that pop off of the bench. You know, we'll see if he's okay with that or like how Steve Kerr handles that in the end. But, you know, he's a big addition, you know, to what's already been a good showing for this team for the last little bit. You add him in there and that's another dimension unto itself. And yeah, shout out Quentin Post. I mean, the guy's a true 7-footer out there, but spaced the floor nicely in this game last night, 2 for 4, 40% from three on the season. Like, that is a, everyone talking about, you know, we got to get Vucevic in here or someone, some other big to play next to Draymond. Again, in that sort of role, you want size, and you know, he can, Post could be a little bit of a better rebounder. You know, he's not the sort of most physical guy that you've ever seen, but you don't need an incredible defensive big man when you're playing next to Draymond. You just need someone who can space it, ideally be out there and just be a big body. And so he, you know, he's an option for them, and a different option than they would have had normally with Looney, who's not going to really space it, and Trayce Jackson-Davis as well. So, they're still a decently deep team. They didn't have to give up all that much of their depth, you know, to go and get Jimmy Butler. So, there's some elements here. There's some things that can work. But I think for this back half of the season, it's going to be, Steve Kerr's going to have to really work quickly and find out quickly who works, like what lineup combinations work with Jimmy out there, you know, who has chemistry where. So, you know, Kuminga coming back as soon as possible, you know, will help that and expedite that. But I'm looking at them and it's like, you know, they especially with sort of technically Jimmy playing the four and Draymond playing the five, which is, you know, going to be their ultimately sort of best skilled lineup. You can get something depending on who those other two guys you throw out there between those two and Steph, whoever they are. You could get a little, you know, death lineup 2.0 going here with a lot of, like you're saying, Jimmy can move the ball around. Steph can, you know, come flying off screens. The Warriors kind of getting back, I think, closer to their proven formula that works, you know, minus the shooting a little bit. But like you said, Iguodala was never a great shooter. No. It was very comparable to Jimmy. And he always worked well out there, even when he was playing alongside Draymond. So we'll see. The age thing still concerns me, but the fit on the court, I think, is going you know, about as well as they could have expected.
Yeah, 100%. Well, we're going to keep a close eye on the Warriors down the stretch of the season. We were talking about it a little bit off the air, man. Quarter of the season left. We're in the final quarter before the playoffs. Can't fucking believe
it. It's March. Yeah, you're listening to this, probably it's fucking March Madness, baby.
I mean, when we're back, it's going to be, or maybe we'll get a little NCAA preview going. Can Cooper Flagg do it? I don't know. Former Toronto Raptor. Let's see. Former, future. Because he'll retire Hall of Famer. Three, four rings, all with the Raptors. It's going to be great. But let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Let's talk about a team that is also looking to, you know, make their names etched in NBA history here. It's the Detroit Pistons. My Detroit Pistons, question mark? This is a good time to put my my stamp on the bandwagon here, man. I'm riding it hard.
It really was.
The Pistons look good, man. They really do. No way to sugarcoat it. Coming off a Wednesday, a huge win over the Celtics. No Jaylen Brown in that one, but they still picked up the 20-point dub in the routing of them at home in front of their home crowd. You know, they didn't even let the Celtics break 100 points, which is you know, no small feat, even without Jaylen Brown out there. And quickly, the Pistons have merged into that top six, and you know, they're jockeying right there with the Pacers and the Bucks for that 4-5 spot. And you know, they are actually in a situation where, you know, JB Bickerstaff, you know, you might have yourself a top four seed home court advantage in the playoffs first round. So I want to pose the question to you, man. Like, is this team a first round upset potential team? Like, is this like a legitimate squad that can go out there and take down, you know, one of these big, bad, nasty bullies like the Cavs, the Celtics, the Knicks, or, you know, maybe the Bucks?
Well, I think I'm going to answer that in two parts, because I think if everyone is healthy, no, I don't think so. Not quite. But the thing is, I don't trust some of these other teams. If you are looking at the Knicks, the Pacers, or the Bucks, you know, we'll just stick to those three. Or because you know the Magic, I think, are pretty solidly behind that group. We'll see if they can really ramp it up and turn things around. But you know, they've obviously the injury luck has hit them this year. But between those,
it looks
three,
like the top six has really been kind of formed. Eh?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd be shocked. You know, we'll see. And the Heat as well. You know, they
I mean, Wiggins will probably average 30, right? So, yeah, put the Heat
true.
In there.
That's true. If the Knicks, the Pacers, or the Bucks go into a series against Detroit and they've just got everyone, I do still think those teams, just even by the experience factor alone, even if they were coming in and Detroit had the home court advantage, I don't think they're quite there. But I'm trying to... That I feel like that sounds like I'm underselling how impressive Detroit has been, because they have been so impressive. But I just, you know, I think if you're going up against a full strength team and you're Detroit, it's like you are relying a lot still on, you know, Tobias Harris and Tim Hardaway and Malik Beasley. Great shooting sort of prowess that they've brought to this team. A big reason, you know, giving Cade that space to operate. It's a big reason why they're doing well at all right now. But I don't think they're quite, you know, at the level to fully win, you know, a series against one of those teams. But I think they could absolutely make it interesting, win a couple games at home. I think, you know, Cade has the ability to take over in any given game and win it almost by himself. And when you have Cade playing well and some shooters that show up, you know, one or two guys, they're going to have a chance to win. But the reason I wanted to answer it in two parts is because I don't trust hardly any of those three teams to come in fully healthy.
Yes.
And the reason Detroit, in my mind, does have that ability to come in and upset is because, like, they're clearly, like, they just have so much energy and they have so much young legs and guys who are hungry and ready to go out there and do this. And, you know, sort of the mix of their veteran shooters and their young guys is nice. It's a classic sort of playoff winning formula.
Good vibes.
And yeah, they clearly have the good vibes. Like, I just love how a lot of these older guys are sticking up for Cade and sort of singing Cade's praises. Like, these are guys that have been around the league. Like, I it was a few weeks ago, some reporter was like, "Oh, Cade's one of the best guards in the East," and Tim Hardaway was like, "No, in the NBA." Like, sort of, you know, confirming that and making sure everyone knows how dominant he's been this year. Who I picked as an all-star starter, by the way.
Yep.
That's a good pick. Looking like a good pick. From over here right now.
Will he be all NBA first team? Let's find out.
We will see. I think they are primed. This is a classic team primed to take advantage of any weakness. If those teams ahead of them come in, they're a little bit beat up. They're like, oh, you know, Jalen Brunson's going to miss the first couple games. Detroit will absolutely jump on it. They'll pile it on. And the more, even more impressive thing than, you know, how Cade operates in the pick and roll and Durin, you know, who's been great recently, you know, diving to the rim on offense and all that stuff, all the shooters. Their defense is really, really cohesive. Like,
yep.
JD Bickerstaff's done such a great job making sure these guys, you know, the rotations are on point. He gets buy-in from, you know, if you're able to get Tobias Harris, Tim Hardaway, and Malik Beasley, who, again, not the greatest defenders ever, and, you know, they're on this team for who knows how long ultimately. They've really bought in defensively as well, not just offensively. These guys play with a lot of energy. So I'm really excited to see what they do in the playoffs. And I don't trust the Knicks, the Pacers, or the Bucks to say, look, oh yeah, we're fully ready to go. We're cohesive. We've got all our guys. One of them is going to have a little bit of sort of issues, I'm sure. It's bound to happen. And yeah, if that's the first round matchup they get against Detroit, you're going to be in for a world of pain. And you know, and like Asar Thompson as well, who's gotten way more sort of opportunity since Jaden Ivey is unfortunately out this year. He has just been a beast, a huge part of their defense as well, such a Swiss Army knife. Like, they're sneakily deep as well, which I like. And you know what? The last thing I'll say, we've badmouthed Dennis Schroeder a lot, and I think he's a bit of a sort of what do you call it? A white elephant, red herring. Like, you look at his stats and it's like, oh, he might be good. Or, you know, he plays well with Germany. It's like, oh, if you're the Raptors a couple years ago, let's give him a chance. This is the perfect situation for him to be in. He's not a lead ball handler. He's clearly second fiddle to Cade, but he is really in small little dose amounts. It's really, really nice to have a guy like Schroeder, because he can run your offense for a few minutes at a time. He can hit shots every now and then. He can get to the rim. And he's just a really good element that they've added. So all of that together, they are a scary team for sure. They're coming. Whether it's this year or next year, they're coming.
Quote Chuck.
Yeah,
them young boys is coming. This is I totally agree. I like the call out there, but the injury health, that's going to be a big part of that upper echelon of the East. All of them having really struggled to maintain that throughout the last couple seasons, not just this year, but last couple years. Time and time again, though, you come to the playoffs, you have this young, spry, cool team. They love playing basketball together. It's fun. It's great. Yeah. And then they come up short in the playoffs. And that's what it just,
I know picturing too.
Yeah. You have to take that licking. You have to, learn how to play in the playoffs, get that experience. And then, you build upon it, hopefully into the future. I mean, all the best championship teams, none of them go out there and they win it their first year. It's never going to happen. It doesn't happen that way. And so there's nothing wrong with losing in the playoffs, but every year I convince myself and I talk myself into that spunky little team and going in there and winning around. I think that they can do it. I think the Pistons can do it, whether in the top half or bottom half of the bracket. I really do think they're going to have a chance to do this. And not just because, Cade Cunningham has been playing in an elite level. Like you said, it was in consideration to be my all-star starter. Ended up bumping him out. Can't remember who for. Maybe Brunson. I don't know. He's been sensational. One of the best players in the entire league this year, no doubt. The driving force behind this team. Asar Thompson, we're talking about his brother a little bit here.
Great.
He's been awesome, like the super soldier, Swiss Army knife type of guy to have out on the court. Super unselfish, does a little bit of everything out there. His defense is insane. 5 steals against the Celtics. He strips like every single thing. He can guard 1 through 5, just a freak. And then you got I think the thing that they have that a lot of these other teams that we see, these young teams that are high flying and have all these hopes and aspirations, then they kind of flame out in the playoffs, is they never have enough vet depth. And then it comes to the off season, and then it's like, okay, we got to sign a vet, got to get some old heads in the locker room, to teach them how to play in this kind of stage. They've got guys who know what it's like to be in the playoffs for deep runs. Dennis Schroeder knows what it's like to be in the playoffs. Tobias Harris knows what it's like to be in the playoffs. Tim Hardaway Jr. knows what it's like to be in the playoffs. They've got guys who they can rely on in the postseason that can help these young guys get through those bright lights. I don't think that they're going to be too caught in the headlights. Like, they will actually, maybe game one and game two, they'll be a little bit, flustered, but they have enough resources now and enough depth, because I actually do think this team is sneakily really deep. B-ball Paul Reed is barely playing. Isaiah Stewart, he's still solid. I don't think he's afraid of nothing. Ron Holland, he's kind of been coming on a little bit here in his rookie campaign late.
What about Fontecchio, the Tech?
Hey, he's always ready to step in there. Tech 9, can we call him that? He should wear 9. That'd be sick. Fontech 9. But this is a squad that I do think has upset potential. Whether they get it or not, I do think will, like you said, depend on the health of the team they're playing. But even if it's full strength, I don't see them going out easy. I think it'll be a 6 or 7 game series. I think they've got enough fight and enough skill that they can do that. For God's sakes, Jordan, when's the last time you seen Malik Beasley run the court, outrun everybody, and throw down a fucking, it was a sick, just fast break dunk? I was like, I didn't even know you could do that still. In Milwaukee, he was so disengaged. He just sat in the corner. He did nothing. And now he's playing for these young boys, and he looks like rejuvenated. Like, Malik Beasley has been absolutely fucking on fire for the Pistons.
Well, he's their second leading scorer, for God's sake.
No, he's been, he's been sensational. I mean, you look back when they beat the Knicks in MSG, he's the one who hit that three, the dagger.
42% this year on 9.5 attempts for three. He's been lights out. It's been crazy.
Well, he had 6 threes in this one. 26 points, 5 boards. He's been amazing. Tim Hardaway has been solid. I don't really know why Beasley's coming off the bench. It must just be consistency, chemistry thing. He's got, the minutes are about the same. Malik Beasley has been fucking on fire. I know you can't depend on him to be scoring 20 points in the playoffs, but I think just having him out there, as a reliable high 30% shooter with Cade, who's going to command so much attention, and he's going to be able to find guys. It's a team I do genuinely believe has a chance to break into the second round. Not a lot of squads do that in their first year after lengthy playoff droughts with cores that haven't really had that experience. But I think that of all the teams, East and West right now, these young squads that are vying, I think they've got one of the best chances to do it, especially in the Eastern Conference. So I'm really, really, really interested in, you know, maybe buying a Pistons t-shirt and really buying.
Yeah,
into
you
got to
get down
thing.
There. You got to get down there for the first round for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I mean, how crazy would it be if they were to win a first round series after how bad they were last year? Like
yeah,
that turnaround
yeah.
is absolutely insane.
They were the worst team in the league last year. And then they had the they had shit lottery luck. Like it's not even like they drafted some Wembanyama guy to carry them into the sunset this year.
Yeah, exactly. It's been pretty crazy. And you know, it also really frustrates me because I'm a Jaden Ivey believer. It really sucks that he can't be out there too, because the man before he went down also as a surprise to everyone was on 5 attempts per game, shooting over 40% from three. He would have solidly been their second leading scorer above Malik Beasley at almost 18 points per game. Like he was playing really, really well, having like a kind of breakout season, and adding a guy like that to this current team going into the playoffs would be such a game changer. And I, you know, that's part of the reason too. I mean, we're talking about health of these other teams. Like they're missing a very, very important piece. And you know, like I said, it's given Asar Thompson way more sort of opportunity to show what he can do, but I think you can play those three guys together. If Ivy's going to be shooting that the ball that well from deep, I think you can play Cade, Ivy, and Thompson all at once there sort of in the backcourt, at least for stretches. So yeah, I think that's part of the reason too why I don't fully believe in them, you know, all else equal to get to the next round. But I would 100%. I don't feel strongly about Indiana, New York, or Milwaukee really at all this year. I will be rooting like hell for Detroit to win a first round series, whether they can do it or not. So it's gonna be fun. And the energy in that building, like it's been so long since they've had good playoff basketball to root for. Even like back when. You know, did they make it the Blake Griffin year? Did they like sneak in?
He pushed them there, and then I think they got swept by the Bucks.
Yeah, like no one really believed it. It was kind of like a transitionary kind of playoff run. This you can feel; it really feels like the beginning of something. The first playoff run under Cade, and you've got these young guys. So no matter what happens, I think it's going to be just a nice, exciting kind of story. So yeah, love it. Hopefully they can keep climbing the standings. They've got all the momentum in the world right now.
Yeah, well, we're gonna keep watching these young boys out there in Detroit, the D town, the D city. Those young boys are coming.
The D is coming, baby.
The D is coming.
Shout out Marcus Sasser as well. Yes. He's out there. He makes things happen.
Makes some plays. But to move on, you know, we talked about Asar Thompson. You know, both these twins are sensational. But man, we got to talk about Amen Thompson. Maybe is he the big dog of the Houston Rockets at this point, man? I feel like every single game that he plays, he just gets better and better and better. Sensational so far with the Rockets. You know, they've kind of gone through a bit of a downswing here. Fred VanVleet been dealing with some injury troubles as well. Only 5-5 in the last 10, but they are on a 2-game win streak. And Amen Thompson's a big part of that. He did get ejected in one of his last games there against the Milwaukee Bucks, flagrant 2 on Giannis, which you know, Giannis said no harm, no foul. He respects it, and I think that's one of the big things you can kind of circle with this guy is that he plays hard, just like his brother, every single game. He doesn't take any shifts or any positions off. You know, he's always out there giving 110%, and he does a little bit of everything. Obviously, the three ball is still, you know, being developed. That's not really there yet, but everything else,
shooting, everything else,
yes. Everything else is like an elite level. Like it kind of reminds me a little bit of like a 6'8" Russell Westbrook in a way. Like I genuinely think he's kind of got that upside. You know, his numbers for the season don't jump at you too much, other than, you know, the maybe double check on these numbers here. Just a light eight rebounds per game. I'm surprised to see his assists only at 3.5, because he has been, you know, such an awesome passer. His last two games, he's had 5 and 6. Six in 3 games before that, he had 11 points and an 18-point triple-double against Phoenix earlier in the month. Like, he is putting up awesome numbers, and I think pairing him with Sengun actually could be better than pairing him with Jalen Green. Like, I think that he, in my mind, has already usurped Jalen Green as the kind of the, if you're looking to build a duo in Houston, I don't think it's Jalen Green and Sengun. I think it's Amen Thompson and Sengun.
I think I'm there too. I think the whole NBA world, or you know, the smart side of it, we're the head of the smart side of the NBA
yes,
world.
Yes, of course.
Are sort of, yeah, getting on the train. I mean, it's just, I just talked about, you know, veterans talking about Cade and sort of pumping him up. If you listen to guys like, you know, Steven Adams, who is massive, one of the strongest guys in the NBA, talk about Amen Thompson
and the
physical gifts that he brings to a court. Like it, they act like they've never seen anyone like this before. And I mean, guys talk about in the same way out of Detroit about Asora as well. Like it's just the physical gifts that these guys have. They're just like, it's like you made an NBA player in a lab. You forgot the little vial that you need in there for the shooting, but everything else, you know, that smashed on the floor or something.
Spent all your VC everything else, on cool exactly. dunk packages.
But like these like 6'7" guys, 210 or whatever they are, like it's just the agility and foot speed mixed with the just strength, you know, big shoulders, like they're strong, they're long, jump out the gym. Like it's just incredible. And the feel that they have for the game defensively is insane. Like the way that Amen Thompson and Tari Eason roam the perimeter for the Rockets are it's the reason they've been gotten any wins at all this year, hardly, because the Rockets offense, and you mentioned Fred VanVleet being out more recently, like it can look god awful at times, but they still manage to beat some of the best teams in the NBA just with that defensive prowess alone. Literally, if anyone scores on Amen Thompson, Ime Udoka gets mad at him. He like yells at him, like even once, because he you know, in his mind, Amen should be able to lock up anyone, you know, 1 through 5 almost at any given time.
Yep.
And so yeah, I think you're talking about who's the big dog. Every time we've done this since Fred VanVleet has been a Rocket, I'm telling you it's Fred VanVleet. Because again, you mentioned it, all of their struggles through this part of the season has exactly and completely coincided with Fred VanVleet being out of the lineup.
Yeah.
They're such a disjointed and still young team on the offensive end. They need Fred VanVleet to calm things down. I know Fred hasn't been having a good shooting season when he's been out there. Numbers will never jump out at you, even when he is playing, but he provides so much of like an intangible leadership quality and a toughness, and sort of is that extension of Udoka out there on the court. Like he's so unsung. So I'm still going to give that to him. But right there in second place, and definitely amongst sort of the young cohort on this team, I think 100% it's Amen Thompson, and he's the one who, you know, the second he gets just, you know, a little bit, like over 30%, I'll even give him from three. Like right now he's 27.4. If you get to like 30-32%, just so guys can't completely forget about you out there, and add a little bit more of, you know, of a bag offensively, whether that's the mid range, you know, a little bit of a post game, you know, what I'm sure he's going to add that as his career goes on. But I think like, not only has he surpassed Jalen Green on this team next to Şengün, but it's like, who's more untouchable on the Rockets, him or Şengün? I think it might be him.
Yeah.
As good as Şengün has been, all-star. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how good I think his future is and what they see from him. So, yeah, it's just been the most impressed you can be by a young guy this year from him, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think you kind of take the offensive ability of Jalen Green and you give it to Amen Thompson, then we're talking like the perfect
MVP.
Player. I don't, you know, they don't have to, you know, make any, you know, drastic changes. Like you can win, I think, with Jalen Green, Şengün, and Thompson. Like I think the three of them together are actually also all really confident.
Don't forget about Jabari Smith.
No, I'm forgetting about him. He fucking sucks. Tari Eason is way better than him.
Yeah,
in pretty much
right,
every single way. Cam Whitmore is better than Jabari Smith too, in my opinion. So I know he's got some issues, I guess, with his attitude and stuff. That's what I've heard. So, you know, we'll see how that all goes.
Yes.
But Jabari Smith is fucking junk. He's trash. This young Rockets team, man, again, kind of similar to what we were saying with the Pistons. Like, I do think they have upset potential, but unfortunately, they do play in the West where it's like there's pretty much no chance for upset potential against some of these fucking big dog teams. Like, I can't imagine the Thunder, the Nuggets, the Lakers. Like, the Grizzlies are kind of young veterans. They kind of know what it's like. Like maybe you'd have a chance against them. Even the Clippers, the Warriors, like AD when he comes back potentially with the Mavs, like it's a fucking, like I, again, it's going to be a slaughter fest for any team, but you know what? iron sharpens iron, and no matter how it goes for the Rockets this year, next year they are going to be terrifying to play against.
Oh, yeah, and I still think they're going to be terrifying to play against this year. Yeah, like, they're not. I don't think they're the type of team. I think they've shown, again, they've very much taken on Ime's sort of ethos as a team. Like, they're not going to think like, oh, you know, we'll get it next year. We're just young and up and coming. The reason that they've won so many games this year is because they go out and fucking take it. Like, I don't think it's going to be easy for anyone, even if they... These teams you're talking about in the West who, yeah, I'm not giving them, the Rockets, a realistic shot to beat almost anyone out there. But the prospect of going into that Rockets building and having to play with all, against all of their athletes, and Şengün passing out of the high post, and these guys just coming at you again and again and again, like, it's, I wouldn't be the most shocked in the world if they were able to upset someone because they've got home court advantage. I don't give them a chance of it right now, but I've seen crazier things, and especially, I mean, just like I said with the Pistons, if you've got a little weakness, if you're coming in, oh, Jamal Murray's, he's hurt his hamstring, he's going to be out for the first couple games. Watch out if you have to go up against the Rockets. So yeah, I give them that respect. It's a similar sort of situation, maybe a little Pistons West like that. It's almost gravy what they do this year because they're so well set up. Going into the future, all these guys are going to take steps forward. So future is bright.
So Jordan, I'm going to throw this at you. I want you to let me know what you honestly think. We've got the big dogs. We've given big dog as a tag, teams that we look at as juggernauts, the contenders. Yes. Big dog sounds cooler. We said little pups, we said baby pups, those teams that are rebuilding, they're not to be worried about, maybe in a couple of years, we'll worry about them. How about this?
Yeah.
Those teams that are young, they're feisty, but we're not really sure what they can do. But if you give them a chance, they might pounce. They may take their opportunity and tear apart the carcass of what you left them. How about pack of hyenas, man? These middle teams, the Pistons and the Rockets, they're hyenas, man.
They really are.
I think they might be.
Man, the hyenas is the perfect way to describe the Rockets for sure. And yeah, the Pistons are growing into it. I love it. We've got a couple pack of hyenas. Those are like... And I think those are the only two. I mean, I think Memphis at one time kind of was what Houston is now, like a young pack. But like you said, like they're getting to a point now where it's like, okay, guys, you've been now the pack of hyenas for a while, and you've been an injured pack of hyenas, but now you're old hyenas that have got to do something, or we might turn into something else. So
it's time to evolve into lions.
Yeah, exactly. 100% hyenas they are.
Moving on to, I was going to start, some talks, some discourse that we had planned here, Jordan, but,
start a conversation.
Start a conversation.
What's that mean with Chuck?
Yeah. Let me show you a pic. I gotta hijack this, Jordan. Breaking news. Shun temporarily lifted because this is going to be annoying. Joel Embiid has been announced, ruled out for the remainder of the season.
Wait,
as of 4 minutes ago.
Wow. Wow.
Called an Ike bomb.
Ooh, is it Shams?
I was told. It's Shams. Shams, however you say it, man. Whatever you want me to say. But Joel Embiid, the former league MVP, ruled out for the rest of the season. I told you this was coming soon. They are, I don't think they've said exactly what the injury is going to be now. But it looks like, Paul George, you can pick up the podcast mic again, man. It's all good. You're in the clear. You aren't competing for shit. Welcome to the bottom of the East, buddy. Not surprising to see this happen, man. It is crazy that we both had the Sixers, potentially going to the finals this year.
I had them in the finals.
It's just,
can't believe it,
insane. 18 games below 500 this season. They're three games, two and a half, pardon me, back for the 10 seed right now. Paul George has been, an utter disappointment for this squad. Joel Embiid has barely been healthy for the entirety of the year somehow, and they're riding a 9-game losing streak. I think the writing has been on the wall for a while, and it looks like Embiid is out for the rest of the year. It's just crazy. And then to top it all off, like I said before, when we talked about the Embiid and Philly struggles earlier in the season, if their pick falls out of the top six this season, they don't even get it. It goes to the OKC Thunder. If they have bad lottery luck, this,
which like, they probably will. Let's
yeah,
be honest.
Yeah, I mean the rap right now, they aren't even in the bottom six. I don't believe. Let me just check their win percentage. 345. They are six. They are the sixth worst team in the NBA right now. But you know what? The Spurs, we'll see. Maybe they'll be able to hang tight. The Trailblazers, they, you know, they're destined for a bit of a drop off here. And who knows? The Nets and the Bulls, they're not going to be holding on to much either. So holy man, it's just this is. I think the biggest failure of an attempted contender ever. I think it has to have that tag now. Like all these other teams that we've talked about in the past, like even in recent memory, you know, you look at like that Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, Metta World Peace, Lakers. Like that's always kind of the big one I always look to. They still got the 7 seed back when you had to be the 7 seed to get the 7 seed. Yes. There was no play-in. Yes. Like they still made the playoffs like as an actual team. Did I even say Dwight Howard? Maybe I misspoke. But this is...
He was forgettable.
This is a squad that like just was never even close to being good this year. Never competitive. Horrible vibes. Nobody was healthy. Like this whole year has been terrible, start to finish, and it's just culminated to this moment. And you know, I really do think that the 76ers should take a hard look at Joel Embiid and his future with this team, because I really don't see how this is ever going to change. I know his stock is probably super low right now. Nobody's going to want to touch him, but. There might be a squad out there willing to give you a first-round pick at a player, and I think at this point you may as well cut your fucking losses, because I don't feel like he's ever going to be able to be a long-time player and a playoff performer down the stretch of the season. I don't think it's ever happening. His body just fails him time and time again.
Yeah, and it sounds like what they're going to do, go in there and break the bones in his knee or whatever, and then
I think it's his hip now.
Put in a little... Oh, I forgot. it's just... It's so crazy how these things play out. Because remember, like, Joel Embiid comes out of Kansas, plays with freaking, was it the same draft year as Andrew Wiggins, or was it a
different same
year?
One. Wiggins went one, Jabari Parker two, Joel Embiid three.
Right. So, you know, and
Aaron Gordon,
I think
four?
Embiid, if... Well, yeah, Gordon
so the Magic?
Was in that class. That makes sense. I think so. I think you're right. I think that's absolutely right. But... Embiid would have been the number one pick if there wasn't Wiggins was pretty highly touted, but you know, it would have been closer if there wasn't already sort of injury concerns with him. And then it's like, okay, he misses, the first little bit. I think he was out. Did he redshirt his whole season, Embiid, out the first year?
Yeah. He wasn't healthy there
time
either.
Early on. Yeah. So it's like, okay, so there's injury concerns. And so then when he comes back and plays a number of great seasons, and he's like, oh, arguably the best center in the NBA, and then it's like, oh, he wins the MVP, he's great, and then you know, he granted he's had some bad luck in the playoffs, but you know, he gets his teams there. Even you know, the Ben Simmons meltdown year, they were the number one seed, people mm-hmm. forget mm-hmm. in the East, but now
blew that 3-2 lead to the Celtics.
Yeah and it's crazy though that the narrative has now swung back around, and it is injuries. It's been injuries all along.
Yeah.
It's been what's held him back this entire time. Right from the beginning, comes into the league, he is a guy who puts a fuck ton of pressure on his body because he throws it everywhere. He falls on the court, at the drop of a hat.
Yep.
Like the way he plays is so reckless and so irresponsible for someone of that size,
karma.
With that much weight and pressure that you put on your joints and your knees. It's just. It's the writing has been on the wall the whole time. People have been complaining about it. We've brought it up many, many times. And you know, especially when there's sort of existing issues already there when you're coming into the league, and it really does look like at this point there's it's just over. Like he might be able to be a somewhat effective player, but as a MVP type, all-star type candidate. Do you think he could ever get back to even close to that? Like, I just don't see how it's possible with everything that's happened, with the age that he's at now, with the way that he has learned to play the game. Like, he would have to completely, I think, reinvent how he does things if he's going to come back and not be an injury risk every game. And yeah, it's just the fact that I came into this season thinking, oh, the Sixers were so smart. They got Caleb Martin, who's now gone. They got Yabusele, who was great in the Olympics, a just nice little fringe signing. They've got Eric Gordon and Kyle Lowry still, and they've got all these great veterans, who are gonna make sure that this team can win even when Joel Embiid's not out there, and then when Paul George misses time, Embiid can pick up the slack, and vice versa. everything that could have went wrong this year has went wrong for this team. Yep. Paul George is legitimately bad. I mean, we forget that they just signed him to a goddamn extension, or, you know, whatever they signed him for. Those
might be
years.
The worst contract in the league. Him and Bradley Beal.
I mean, it's just I just don't see how in this situation that's just absolute garbage, how a 30-year-old center, and he's going to be 31 here in midway through March, how he's ever going to come back. And this is going to be another prolonged absence. Like, you know, he's going to, you know, get whatever surgery or whatever he needs, on the knee. It's going to take a while. And then it's the cycle again, too, of he has to ramp back up conditioning wise. He has to get back in game shape. And, you know, because of that, the speed of the game is going to make it more likely that he's going to injure himself. It's a terrible situation. And now you, even the bright spots on your team, which are mainly Tyrese Maxey, who's had to do so much heavy lifting this year that, you know, it's not been fair to him. Mm-hmm. And even like a guy like Jared McCain, it's like, he was your one bright spot early on in the season. He's out. And we'll see what his injury, sort of concerns look like going forward. This is the smart thing to do. They weren't going anywhere. Ultimately, this team just doesn't work. And now you're looking at also bigger picture things. Are the owners going to be happy with Daryl Morey for that much longer? Are they going to let him tinker with things for that much longer? What about Nick Nurse? Because even though this team has been, you know, riddled with injury, bad luck, Nick Nurse has flat out lost that locker room.
Good luck with those guys,
hard.
Nick.
Like,
pussy,
It's just not. Masai is a bit vindicated, or feels like it right now. But it's just, there's not one thing I can think of looking at the Sixers that I feel good about. It's just insane.
Yeah, it's a bad time to be a Sixers fan, and I couldn't be happier about it. 2020 hindsight, though, I got to say, you know, you kept Embiid, should have kept Joel Okafor. Maybe next time, guys. Good luck next year.
Absolutely right.
But moving on back to our regular scheduled programming after that breaking news that we would, I just wanted to get in there because you know what, I think that's worth noting.
For the first, we break news.
Yes, we do. Moving on, some quick fire news here. The Cleveland Cavaliers are officially the first team in the NBA this season to clinch a playoff spot. They're 48-10, for God's sake. Like, that is a beastly record. Like, it's insane how good them and the Thunder are compared to everybody else in the entire NBA. Like, they're six. Like, the Cavs are 6.5 games ahead of the Celtics. That's wild to see, but you know what? It's all, you know, comes out when you watch them. They are one of the deepest teams, best run teams in the NBA this season. It's really been fun to see. Will they be able to go far in the playoffs? I think that's still up for debate. They'll definitely be able to get tight. I think if they don't get to the conference finals, the season would be a letdown ultimately. And I do think they've got the power to get there. And you know, one thing before I hand it over to you here, George, before we just kind of break down the Cavs as a whole here a little bit, I do want to say, and not that this really means much, you know, it's all kind of fake stats. Everyone can find numbers to make things work. But I'm taking a bit of a betting angle here. Everybody knows that's how I make my bread and butter. That's also how I lost a lot of bread and butter. But did you know that in the last 5 years, no NBA team has won the NBA championship with less odds of plus 750 coming into the All-Star break? And this season, only three teams had that distinction: OKC Thunder, Boston Celtics, Cleveland Cavaliers. So if that trend continues, those are your only three viable candidates for any bettors out there. It's Cavs, it's Thunder, and it's Celtics. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, the Cavs are such an interesting team to think about. Like, I was talking to someone else about them the other night.
You took other people at basketball?
Basically, I do. It's rare, but I did.
It's fucked up.
But it's like,
start a podcast with them. But them,
I should. We should bring them on. Andrew, no. Come on the pod. I don't know if he listens. Hopefully, you're listening, Andrew. Otherwise, what's the point? Cleveland, like, it's always in the context of, can they beat Boston? You know, that's the question for anyone in the East. They're the ones that anyone's gonna have to go through. And it's like, okay, you're thinking about their matchup. It's still in my mind hard to picture them beating a fully healthy Boston team, just because of the wing and backcourt size and strength and depth that Boston has, versus, you know, the Cavs, as good as their backcourt is, are going to be, they're going to have trouble going up against Derek White and Drew Holiday. It's almost unfair, a couple years later now, thinking that they have both of those guys. And the advantage, I don't think, is quite enough when you're looking at the front court depth, which is much better for the Cavs, granted. I don't think that's enough to push them over the top against Boston, who still are going to, if they play the way they want to, going to spread them out, shoot a bunch of threes, get to the rim and get to the mid range as well. So that's still the big question for Cleveland, and still sort of the question of the East. But I can, the other part of my brain is thinking like Cleveland's going to have home court advantage against everyone, possibly home court advantage all the way through, even if they get to the finals, depending on how it ends up with OKC here. But like that puts them in really, really good position to just go out. They're so deep. They've got DeAndre Hunter now. I mean, we're talking about this on Friday here, which in a few hours we're going to get Cavs Celtics again. The tilt, first time obviously since Hunter is on this team. The Cavs have not lost since they acquired DeAndre Hunter. So I'm really curious to see how effective he is going up against, a Jaylen Brown, a Jason Tatum. How threatening does that Cavs defense look with a big wing, the exact prototype that you and I have been saying they've needed this whole time? Is he the perfect guy that they could have got? No, I think they could have got a more sort of cerebral, more experienced, smarter defender and passer, certainly. But he's got the physical tools that they need, and all things considered, was just sort of the perfect pickup for them. So, yeah, I'm looking at Cleveland. We'll see how tonight goes, and I don't know. Like, is it more of a play of like, oh, Cleveland can do this, or is it? Do we think Boston last year there was a bit of a cakewalk? I mean, we saw it. They dropped a game to Miami. I think it was just one game. Ultimately, they dropped to Cleveland as well when they played last year. Unless they got another one, I'm not remembering. But like Boston can look vulnerable, and if Cleveland has the home court and they're clicking on all cylinders, and you've got Evan Mobley, I think Evan Mobley. I mean, we probably said this last year, but Evan Mobley is the X factor. If he's going in there getting 15 rebounds, 20, even if it's just 20 points or something, and spreading out the floor from three, if he's hitting his threes, then that opens up so much room for Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to go operate, for Jared Allen to, dive to the rim and do what he does, and potentially outplay Porzingis. There is a path. I don't see it right now, but there is a path. And I do think that, those betting odds that you mentioned, that is the big three. Out west after OKC, it's such a jumble. There's so many teams you can make arguments for. It's like, is it the Lakers? Is it Denver? Is it Memphis? But in the East, I mean, with how much New York, we've seen them struggle recently and all season really against any of the other best teams in the league. Indiana, no one really believes in them, and Milwaukee still not quite there. Like, it is going to be between Cleveland and Boston. They're two of the best teams. And Cleveland, I want to believe, basically. I want to believe. I don't quite see it there yet, but there's a world where I can see it happening.
Well, and the last thing to talk about here on today's show, it's going to be about Anthony Edwards. LeBron says he's going to be the face of the league, but nobody wants to be the face of the league. It's a tough one. Ant has been suspended for the 16th. For one game for his 16th tech, pardon me, of the season, usually reserved for Draymond Green. I think it's been a while since we've seen somebody else get that one. But Anthony Edwards suspended, and it's coming at a tough time because you're jumbled right in that mix of that kind of play-in bubble. And right now they're the 8 seeds. You're on the right side of it, but the Mavericks are tied with you right now. You just have the tiebreaker over them, and the Kings are only a game behind you. You can't afford to lose him for no reason for one game. And, albeit the tech that he got was pretty soft. He was arguing over a call, which, to be fair, he was being a bitch about that call. I'll put that out there. He pushes off and then falls over because of his force that he generated. It was 100%, if it was anything, an offensive foul, and he complained about it. Did I think that he like went over the line? Do I think it was necessary to give him a tech? No, I think that was weak. Like I'm in the belief that that if you're getting a tech, you've really gone off the rails. You've said something over the line. Maybe he did, but as far as I saw, he was even a little shocked that he got it. But he was complaining, and you know, maybe he was just constant complaining all game, and they finally teed him up. But I mean, there's a billion NBA players that do that these days, so kind of hard to give him home for that. But throughout the year, and you know, really his career, we talked about it last time we talked about the Timberwolves. His immaturity and you know, lack of professionalism sometimes on the court has cost the Timberwolves in the past. And you know, if he doesn't wisen up, and head coach Chris Finch, he said, he's got to mature. He's got to, you know, take some accountability. This is on him, and it's going to hurt the team. So hopefully this will, you know, maybe give him a bit of a kick in the pants. Maybe some of his teammates will also, you know, pull him aside and say, like, man, we absolutely need you out here right now with, you know, all the other injuries and difficulties this team has been dealing with, especially in recent weeks. You know, Julius Randle and DiVincenzo have both been dealing with, the nagging injuries. So, you know, and then you look at it, Naz Reid, like, He's supposed to be like your second best player pretty much right now. And, you know, he went 0-for in their last game from the field. So it's a dark time here for the Timberwolves. And again, you know, we were talking about your Sixers finals pick, my finals winner, the Timberwolves. I mean, that one is just looking like burnt up money at this point.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, it's funny how he's sneakily like become, you know, got to this number. Like I think a lot of people had that reaction. Like I didn't know he was so close to this suspension level, but he is, he can be a bit of a hothead, and you know, that's what you like about him. That's why he's such a compelling guy. Why he's such a star. I mean, you saw, you know, the other night when the Wolves came all the way back against the Thunder. I mean, a lot of that, comeback, he was actually on the bench, but he came out there for one of the final possessions and blocked SGA right at the rim. And you know, and let him hear it afterwards. Like that fire and that passion is what makes him so good. But again, he's still a young guy, so it's you know, it's going to be hard, and it's going to take time for him to learn to control it. And yeah, it does. You're right. At this point, it's like you've literally hurt the team because you're not going to be able to be out there. And then I don't know how it happens in the playoffs. I mean, I know we've dealt with this Draymond before. Like, does it reset, or do you get a certain amount more of allowance or something?
Like, I don't think so, because that's how he got suspended twice. He got suspended Game 6 NBA Finals the against the Cavs 2016, and then he got suspended against the Kings that first round after the Sabonis tie-up.
But that was just – but was that on the number of techs, or was that because he literally stepped on the fucking man's chest?
The Sabonis one, I'm not sure, but I want to say that LeBron, like the one in the finals, that one I swear number. Was number.
That was, yes. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, well, you know, however it works, if he gets a few more that he's allowed or whatever, but like, you know, if it gets to the point where it happens in the playoffs, I mean, that goes without saying, that is, you know, the Timberwolves are more than likely, you know, I would say almost 100% going to lose a game if Anthony Edwards not out there. So he does have to realize, like, this isn't, you know, his first or second or third year in the league. I forget actually how many years he's been in the league now. It's got to be, is this four? Is this five?
This is four.
Four. Okay. So, like, officially, it was cemented with the fact that the Timberwolves moved on from Cat last year, that this is Anthony Edwards' team. Everyone knows it. He has to transition out of the sort of, you know, I'm just a young player. I can be a hothead. It doesn't really matter. He's got to take more of a responsibility. Again, it goes without saying.
Fifth season.
Five. Okay, there we go. It goes without saying, but I think he needs to realize that sooner than later, because it also, I mean, it ties into the Timberwolves also just being better as a team. Like, I think Anthony Edwards, a lot of the time, worries about himself and I don't mean that in like a selfish way, but he worries about playing really well himself, going out there, hitting his threes, competing on defense, which, you know, when he's locked in, he's one of the best wing defenders in the league. He kind of floats in and out of that intensity, but like, he's really good at doing that. He has got to not only take that sort of more of a leadership responsibility and realize that more is on his shoulders now, but also what I've been saying for a couple of years now, he's got to get more other people involved. I mean, that's another part of the maturing and taking on a heavier load in terms of running a team. Like, that's sort of the next level of his development, and I think it's all connected. So I have no doubt that he's going to get there, because I think more than anything, he wants to win and he's a competitor. But something to monitor, especially when it comes to the playoffs. This snuck up on me. It's a sneaky little chatterbox to the refs. I didn't realize it was quite to that level.
Well, if you guys are chatterboxes out there, chatter to us on X, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook for you old heads.
W's in the shot.
Yeah, give us a follow at Big Dog Ball Talk, and we will be back on Monday bringing you guys all the craziest recaps from this past weekend. Yep. But until then, this is Matt Eckhart, Jordan Flegel, Big Dog Ball Talk, and as my good friend Jordan always says.
I do always say this, Matt, you and I are the goats. I'm just going to tell a quick little anecdote to do with that. I was listening to an NBA podcast. I won't say which one it was, but an NBA podcast. And for whatever reason, they forgot their version of producer Alex didn't put in the edited version. So I heard a lot of like, blah, blah, blah. The guy kind of misspoke. And he's like, oh, let me take that again. And they go back and they do it and they cleanly get it. Me and Matt go, we raw dog this shit. I hope everyone knows.
One shot, Alex, one take.
Yeah, one take every time. Producer Alex doesn't touch this. He hasn't done his job in months. He just sits in the booth smoking. So just so everyone knows, the fact that each and every one of these pods is absolutely perfect, that just comes down to me and Matt.
Yeah, don't talk about the audio machine.